Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Manhattan, Kansas. We are a welcoming congregation. We believe in the inherent worth and the dignity of every person. We welcome all who may come in our doors, and we encourage the spiritual growth of our congregation. If you are a first-time visitor or are fairly new to the fellowship, please, we'd love to get to know you. Please take a moment to stand and introduce yourselves. Any first-time visitors or people who are relatively new? Well, all of you old-timers, say hi to your neighbors anyway. And since you are all old-timers, you do know to share with us in the entryway after the service for coffee and snacks. So we look forward to talking with you out there after the service. Oops. Okay. This morning we are treated to the music of Johann Sebastian Bach and to the music played by the Woodwinds Anonymous. Last week I gave a service and I mentioned the virtue of art. This morning I'd light the chalice, as we always do, to bring light to our morning service, but especially in light of the beautiful music we are about to hear and to the virtue of art. I bring your attention to the announcements that are printed in the program. We have one additional announcement to make. Ann, I did not forget. Ann Cowan brought to my attention that the Prairie Star District's annual conference will be held April 13th through the 15th. We would love to have representatives from this fellowship attend the Prairie Star District meeting. It's in Bloomington, Minnesota, and the workshop, or included in the annual meeting, will be workshops, speakers, music, and Ann says there will be fun at the district meeting. So the registration deadline is March 14th. If you'd like some more information, please visit Ann after the service or go to the website of the Prairie Star District, and you can register online and get more information there as well. Are there any other announcements that... Okay. This morning our opening hymn is a piece of music written by Johann Sebastian Bach. However, the words are written by our very own Jennifer Bryant. And if you look in your program, you will find the words to both the opening playing of this piece, and she has also written words to our closing piece as well, which is the same hymn number 414. But as I said, the words are written in the program. So please stand as you are able. We will be accompanied this morning by the Woodwinds Anonymous. We'll now take a few moments to give you an opportunity to please share any joys or concerns you might have with the fellowship. And the microphone is...
As many of you know, Larry Weaver, as many of you know, my father died earlier this week. I want to thank everybody for the outpouring of sympathy and support that I have gotten from this congregation, and I might add from my co-workers at work. Having Dad live with me and my wife for the last 2.5 years, and in particular caring for him the last 5 weeks of his life, was a wonderful experience. He was a wonderful man. the person I am today really bears the imprint of my father and my wife. At one point in the last couple of weeks, Dad was saying thank you for what I was doing for him, and I forget what it was, but I could honestly tell him, Dad, you are just reaping what you have sown. I also wanted to tell you, because many people are anxious about death and dying, that Dad's death was completely peaceful. Monday was the first day he had been unable to transfer via wheelchair from bed to recliner. We thought that he was stable, just at a new low level. Tuesday, as I say, we thought he was stable. He couldn't speak very clearly at that point, but we have reason to think he was feeling pretty good that day. The nurse came about 1 o'clock. His vital signs were good. She left about 2 o'clock. About 3 o'clock, he was resting, breathing shallowly, but not out of the ordinary. And a few minutes before 4 o'clock, he just stopped. End of story. My wife was with him the whole time. And I want to share two final remarks. One, from my father, because a couple of weeks before his death, he was kind of anxious about dying. He'd have a dream that he had died and wake up, and me or my wife would be in there with him, and he'd say, "Am I dead?" "No, Dad, you're not dead." And one of the times, my wife, a lapsed Catholic, but who still bears the imprint, said, "Dr. Weaver, if you wake up and you're not feeling happy, then you're alive, because when you die, you'll go to a better place." To which my father replied, "Those things they taught me as a child are mostly myths." Okay. My father was rational until the very end, really. And the final remark comes from my son, who is a Catholic, and he said, "I know Granddaddy was a lifelong Methodist, but he died the way a good Catholic would want to, on Mardi Gras and avoiding Lent."
Thank you, Larry.
I just had two quick things. One was just Barbara and Jim are heading out to go visit family in Colorado this week, so if you can keep them in your thoughts. The weather looks okay right now, but it's been a little iffy earlier this week, so we're hoping it'll be good. The other thing is a joy to share. I'm on my partner back home. I think it was Wednesday last week. She led a discussion about spirituality and religion and being LGBT. And for me and my partner and both of us on our separate journeys as well as together, that's been a really big part of our lives. And it sounds like it was just a really powerful time for her and for other people that had come as well, including the people that inevitably show up that are kind of, you know, "Well, what about Jesus? What about Jesus?" And it's like, okay. But, you know, the words that needed to come came to her, and it was just a really positive experience for everybody. So that was really a joy to share this week.
Well, thank you for sharing. The next portion of the service, Jennifer Bryant will call up all two of the children who I see in the room for the children's story. Oh, Corey is on her way to bring in more, I hope.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Good morning. Can I start by asking Mrs. Calhoun to show everybody the bassoon and maybe play a couple notes on it? Only if you like. Let's clap for her. Okay. Well, Mrs. Calhoun, Mr. Chanteau, and everybody else up there is going to play a lot of music today, but you're going to miss most of it. So maybe you can hear it down the hallway. But so I'm going to tell you a little story, though, before you go back down the hallway, about this man, Sebastian Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach, that wrote all this music, over 1,000 pieces, that these people are going to play for us today. And he took, when he was 15 years old, he took a 200-mile walk. So I'm going to tell you about that walk. Sloan is walking right now as we speak. Bach takes a walk. When Bach was 14 years old, he and a classmate of his, Georg, went to take a walk. And they walked, and they walked. And it's in Germany. And then more, all up to 200 miles. And guess why they walked so far? Can you guess? Anybody got a guess? Burke? No? Can you see the animals in the picture? What are they? I drew it. Yeah. Oh, well. Oh, and here's a sign that they're going into the Harz Mountains. They walked through the very cold mountains. I gotta turn this mic on. They walked 200 miles so that they could sing in a choir. Can you imagine how much they loved to sing that they would walk 200 miles to do it? They walked at night and they walked at day. I hope they slept some too. It would have been nice if the boys could have flown. However, their big trip was over 300 years ago. So they couldn't have flown because there weren't any airplanes. And up here I wrote whale or sky metal. Sky metal would be an airplane. But it kind of looks like a whale too. You think? Looks like a shark. Oh. On the trip, Bach heard music. There's Bach down there. There's a choir over there. The choir they joined actually was called in St. Michael's School, so they walked the miles to be in the school and sing in a famous choir. Can you guess how many instruments Bach played, by the way? How many do you think? And I don't actually know the whole answer, but I know he at least played the violin, the piano. Well, did they have pianos back then? Harpsichord, organ, viola, violin, probably cello. Four or five. Sebastian loved working on keyboards, just like our own Mr. Mole. And this harpsichord has a smiley face. At this point, please play or sing your favorite Bach melody so that you may entertain these young men. Don't applaud because you might startle them. Oh, there's a violin behind me. I'm going to have you look at the picture because the reading of it will be kind of hard. Miss Lott sent the picture to go with the picture. Bach turned 15 while he and Georg traveled to Lüneburg. I like to think that these musical teenagers paused on their travels that day in the cold mountains. Perhaps they chatted about school and girls and music. I hope they had a little wurst and cheese and bread and maybe fruit. That way, they could have shared a birthday dinner while they watched the sky turn pink and the sky watched them. They could hear the birds singing. The end, Alfine Fine. Thank you very much. Go now.
Peace. Go now.
We ask now that you share with the fellowship contributing to the offertory.
As you pass that around, we will be accompanied, or the offertory will be accompanied by Woodwinds Anonymous playing
Cerebon,
thank you.
Jennifer shared with us a reading that we'll open this morning's service with. The words are those of Pablo Casals, and he relates, "Each day I am reborn. All my life I have started each day in the same manner," writes Pablo Casals. "It is not a mechanical routine, but something essential to my daily life. First, I go to nature. It is a rediscovery of the world of which I had the joy of being a part. It fills me with the awareness of the wonders of life, with a feeling of incredible marvel of being a human being. Then I go to the piano, and I play two preludes and fugues of Bach. It is a sort of benediction on my house. The music is never the same for me. Each day is something new, fantastic, unbelievable. That is Bach, like nature, a miracle." Jim?
Hi, I'm Sarah Nusswarren, and I am playing the French horn today, or more properly just called the horn. And the first piece that we're going to start with is from the cantata Wachet auf, ruft uns die Stimme, more commonly in English called Sleepers Wake. And one of the questions that I had about this was, I knew Bach wrote a lot of cantatas. How did he come to write quite so many? So at 37, Bach began working at Leipzig, and there he was responsible for the music in four churches during Sunday services, special festivals, and major holidays, as well as a teaching post at the St. Thomas School. So those were his required duties. In addition to these, he decided to write a repertoire of cantatas to provide music suited to the themes of the church calendar. His goal was to have fitting music for all the services of the year and all the different texts that went with those services. This particular cantata that the piece we're playing comes from deals with waiting and watching, so it's usually actually performed during Lent now, even though it's actually written for the last Sunday before Lent that only happens about every 7 years. And so, like many of the cantatas, it's based on an old hymn tune that went with the text originally, but he's embellished it with a faster, sort of more energetic, higher part. And in this particular movement, a Bach scholar called Julian Mincham has commented that perhaps because the two pieces parts go together so elegantly, that Bach may have intended to represent the entwining of the spiritual and physical in human experience with his counterpoint.
Thank you. On? You hear it? Okay. I'm Jim Chanteau, longtime member here. Actually, I was thinking when I was driving in today, when did I first join the UUs? It was actually 1972 when I first joined it. We were down on Bluemont then. And variations of this group have played every year, maybe every other year, ever since then. The very first performance that Woodwinds Anonymous had was as a clarinet trio in the basement of the old Bluemont building. So that's how far back the connections go between this group and this congregation. In our present form, we are a woodwind quintet. That's why there's five different instruments up here, a classical form. And it's probably quite appropriate that the next piece we play is called the classical quintet. Now, the one thing, I hear music. Okay. You cannot talk about Johann Sebastian Bach without talking about his progeny. What do you have, 20 children, two wives. Only about half of them lived. It was not a good time for children growing up. But among his children were a series of sons who were also composers. And we'll play several of the pieces by those sons. The last of the sons who was a composer was Johann Christian Bach, who wrote the particular piece we're going to play. Now, Johann Christian was born when Sebastian Bach was 50 years old. That's not bad. By the way, I always wondered about Mrs. Bach and raising all those kids. What a task that was. Well, there was two Mrs. Bachs, I understand. Yeah, the first one got worn out, I guess. Johann Christian Bach spent most of his life and career in England and became known as the London Bach because of that. He did speak English as well as German. Probably his most important contribution, however, to the history of music was the fact that Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart studied under Johann Christian Bach, and many of the styles that the young Mozart adopted were, in fact, styles being introduced by Johann Christian. This piece of music is quite typical of a Mozartian style, much more so than the classic Baroque style of what we just played, which is Johann Sebastian. So this is the classical quintet. It's in three movements. It is traditional not to applaud after the first two. Wait till the third, and then you can have the thunderous applause. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Betty Hensley. I play the flute. It has over about 200 parts, and I don't suggest taking it apart and trying to put it together because I don't know if I could do it. The next piece we're playing is Yesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. It is the most common English title of the 10th movement of the cantata, Heart and Mind and Deed and Light, and it's composed by Johann Sebastian Bach. Today, it is often performed at wedding ceremonies slowly and reverently, which is in defiance of the effect suggested by Bach in his original scoring. It is the 32nd surviving cantata that Bach composed, and he wrote a total of 200 cantatas during his lifetime in Leipzig. I can't pronounce German. Largely to meet the church's demand for about 58 different cantatas each year.
I'm Nancy Calhoun, and you know how family trees grow. Well, we're going to be not a PDQ Bach, but we're adding a branch to the Bach tree that you've maybe never heard of before. We're going to hear from Jacques Offenbach, and he wrote an opera that was performed in 1880 called The Tales of Hoffman. Now, it's based on a story of a Hoffman who was a poet. And the scene that we're going to paint right now is Hoffman is in a tavern, and the students in the tavern are saying, "Oh, tell us some stories. Tell us about your loves." And so he starts off telling about his first love, which was Olympia, a robot created by a scientist. Now, he falls in love with her, not knowing that she is a mechanical doll. He apparently has bought some glasses that make her look like a real woman. But in this opera, she sings a very famous opera, a very famous aria, which is called the Doll Song. And she's a robot. Back then, they didn't have batteries. So during this aria, she keeps running down, and they have to crank her back up so that she can finish her aria. So in this number, our soloist is our oboist, Susan, and you'll have to listen carefully to find out when she runs down and gets cranked up and can finish her aria. So this is the Doll Song from The Tales of Hoffman by Jacques Offenbach.
Thank you. I think I ran down before I started. Our next piece is in Dolce Jubilo, which is by Papa Bach, Johann. And I think you'll recognize it maybe as the song Good Christian Men Rejoice is the tune, the traditional Christmas carol. And the original song text was an alternation of medieval German and Latin, and is thought to have been written by the German mystic Heinrich Suse circa 1328. And according to folklore, Suse heard angels sing these words and joined them in a dance of worship. In his biography, it was written, "Now this same angel came up to the servant brightly and said that God had sent him down to bring heavenly joys amid his sufferings, adding that he must cast off all his sorrows from his mind and bear them company, and that he must also dance with them in heavenly fashion. Then they drew the servant by the hand into the dance, and the youth began a joyous song about the infant Jesus." So it's a very old, old song, and I think you'll notice it. It's been written a variety of ways, and I hope you like this arrangement.
Well, it's back to me again. Obviously, today I am playing the clarinet, which actually was where I started when we played with this group, so I've turned full circle. We're going to play now a number we've played one by the youngest of the well-known Bach son composers. Now we'll play one by the oldest, Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach. It's been said that had his father not been a famous composer, he would have been the best-known Bach composer, but his star has sort of been dimmed by the brightness of his father's star. But nonetheless, C.P.E. Bach, as he's often known, is a very important musical figure because of the transition from the Baroque style, which we just did a Baroque number composed by the old man, to the classical style, which is the earlier one we did by Christian Bach. This is an in-between number. And so, in a sense, C.P.E. Bach introduces what becomes known as classical music. This is of a somewhat different style than the others, and one thing you'll notice is there's lots of turns and trills and little embellishments. That was one of the characteristics of C.P.E. Bach's music. This is Andante. It's interesting that even today we don't know exactly who wrote this. There are three original manuscripts which have been found in Germany, one clearly indicating that Sebastian Bach, the father, was the author, another clearly indicating that the son, C.P.E. Bach, is the author, and the third one, which should be the tiebreaker, merely says Mr. Bach. So we still don't know who did it, but it's quite possibly they both worked on it together. Since C.P.E. Bach was composing at the same time that his father was still composing. So they're both great composers. This is Andante, one of the six sonatas composed by C.P.E. Bach. As if Bach didn't compose enough great music, Bach contributed one other thing to music that made all the difference in the world, as it turned out. Prior to Bach, there was no agreement among composers or musicians or instrumentalists about what the keys were. And I was actually talking to Slavomir last week about this, and he said he's been to music that was composed before Bach for the harpsichord or the clavier, and that between pieces there would be 4 or 5 minutes while they retuned for the new key. And so it was a very boring concert. Everybody sit there twiddling their thumbs while they're retuning for the new one. After Bach, there was a settled set of keys, and that didn't need to be done anymore. The piece that did it, or actually two sets of pieces, were the Well-Tempered Clavier, parts 1 and 2. We actually had three numbers, but we played one of those for the offertory, so we're just going to play two of those numbers now from the Well-Tempered Clavier. What this did was establish all the different keys, 24 major and minor keys, and there's one written in each of those keys as Bach demonstrated how the new key system should work. So if Bach hadn't contributed anything else, he would have given us modern music, scales, all the different keys. What an incredible mind. Well, we've got one more final number. It's listed as an encore. It's just our last number. Another one by Offenbach. One you have probably heard, but not by the title listed here, which is its true title. Offenbach wrote a number of operas during his lifetime. Oops. And put it back up here again. Orpheus in the Underworld was one of his better-known operas, and in there he composed a particular selection, which, as listed in your program, is the Gallop Infernal. And that is the true name of this. Now, it turned out about that same time there was a dance hall craze going through Paris, and this number was picked up and given a new name of the type of dance that was done. It had nothing to do with what Offenbach called it. This is really the Gallop Infernal. We might have a little contest as to who can give it its real name. How quickly? You'll recognize it immediately.
Thank you, Jim, and Nancy, and Betty, and Sarah, and Susan. We greatly appreciate you coming and sharing your music with us this morning. We will close today as we began today by singing hymn number 414. But again, our own Jennifer Bryant has written words to accompany the recessional portion of the song, and those are in the insert in your program. So it's hymn number 414 will be accompanied by Woodwinds Anonymous, and the music is provided by Jennifer. Thank you, and please join us in the entryway for a coffee and conversation.